Then the video of the meeting and the meeting's minutes were not posted until the Oregonian filed a Freedom of Information Act request for them. KABU's Lisa Loving spoke last week with local business owner James Posey about the historic roots of alleged racism in the awarding of city construction contracts and how that impacts jobs for communities of color in the Portland metro area and around the country. Posey has agitated for a fairer contract system since the early 1990s and is currently the vice president of the Portland NAACP.
I saw in the Oregonian that Andrew Colas and other people had literally on that construction contracting panel had voted no confidence in the city, and that the city apparently did not post that. Are you following that story? Did you know about it before anybody else knew it?
I didn't know about the story, but if you go back and look at the video, the minutes from that meeting, I'm the one that precipitated the call for a no confidence vote. I'm the one, I'm not on the commission. And, you know, the backstory is that I elected not to be on the commission because I wanted to be able to not have to poison the well, so to speak, or would, you know, everybody knows what my position is. And so I elected to not get on that commission, but I wanted to give citizen input. And I was just real frustrated and that night, and really said that those folk were there just sort of twiddling their thumbs. And it was if you go back and you look at the full video, I actually said I wish that this mayor would resign because he allowed this commission to be created and then walked away from it. And, you know, I was a pretty avid supporter of Charlie Hales. And I don't want to take total credit, but I think this whole commission came into being as a result of me trying to push Mayor Hales and Josh Albert to do something really fundamental about the historic problems that we face out of the purchasing department of the city of Portland for many, many years. So that's the backstory. I would advise you to take a full look at that commission meeting, and I think I'm somewhere a minute and 23 on the audio ranting and raving about what that commission had not done.
I was looking at the Regional Consortium Disparity Study from 1996, and I was realizing I don't even know when James Posey, the construction company owner, started agitating against the city on these issues. James, when did you start?
I go all the way back to Bud Clark, and, during that period of time, and Bud Clark was put together a committee, a similar kind of commission. Avell Gardley was involved in it, and it's time and time again we've been confronted with this whole issue. And, you know, the law has changed so many times. We've had the Croson decision. We've had a lot of decisions. But at the end of the day, what has happened is that the city has not had the political will to do anything different than what they've been doing. They've hidden behind Supreme Court decisions and all kinds of things. And their legal department, their risk management, has sent out signals for a long time. The city attorney would give the city council clues that if they did anything, they would be sued. But there's nowhere in the country can you find any proliferation of suits based upon equal treatment of minority contractors. So they've used that as a sort of shield and use it as a way of not doing anything. Even where there's best practices across the country, they've failed to implement it. For example, I don't want to talk about Chicago, but right now because they've had some other issues. But Rahm Emanuel has said to the contractors, the white contractors in Chicago, if in fact they want to do business with the city of Chicago, they must come to the table showing that they've done business in the private sector. It's not enough to try to do business only on government contracts, but you if you really want to do business with the city of Chicago, you have to come to the table with a track record of doing business in the private sector. Those sort of common sense things that broaden the base about utilization have never been implemented. The other big, huge piece that is really apparent, like a glaring example of negligence, is the fact that disparity study after disparity study, the city still has not been able to effectively track the utilization. And that's one of the things that that commission was looking at. And one of the things that Charlie Hales and Josh Albert said they were going to do, they were going to put together a real-time tracking mechanism to find out who is getting these contracts, and they haven't done it. And then the other piece that's so frightening is that the city auditor has shown and told them after a city audit that the most of the benefit from the minority programs are going to white males, and they failed to act in changing the process by which they still, you know, administer the program. So that's those are some of the backstories behind that stuff. Does that make any sense? Am I rambling on, or do you
understand? You're not rambling on, because one of the things about talking with you about this is that I find that there's so many new people moving to this town that they don't know the history that the rest of us know. Mm-hmm. So as far as they know, they don't even think about when it started, let alone the transatlantic slave trade, if we could go that far back. But mm-hmm. it's like even just going back to, like you said, these studies with all these different mayors in the past, and they're hemorrhaging pounds and pounds of paper with oceans of ink, but they don't do anything. So let me ask you, here's another question I wanted to ask you, James.
Sure.
So what if I understand it correctly, Charlie and Josh say they can't deal with this. They've let it go on by itself because they're so laser focused on the housing emergency. But now when we're talking about construction contracting, we're talking about jobs. Can you supply that missing link? Why is this issue of disparity, construction contracting, why is it so important to everyday people in the community?
Well, it undergirds just about everything. You can track back just about all the symptoms, all the negativity around high unemployment rates, school dropouts. All of it tracks back to people of color's inability to provide and stabilize their families. And that even folds over into the whole piece around homelessness, which Josh and those guys are dealing with. They've been frantically dealing with symptoms as opposed to causes, and that's not, they're not alone in that. And, you know, it's kind of like all these emergencies pop up, and then they want to run and try to address the emergencies when in fact, many of the emergencies are caused by this underlying lack of economic capacity. In fact, the new potential mayor coming in, Ted Wheeler, he actually agreed with me several years back when I called this a economic apartheid in Portland, the way these things are dished up and the way the politicians and so forth are dealing with it. And no one wants to follow the money about really what happens to these communities of color. Let me give you an example. We all know that the Selwood Bridge just got built by the county. If you go back and look at my equity scoreboard, equityscoreboard.com, midway through that thing, we found that even though Multnomah County was funding that thing about 80%, only about 20% of the employees were from Multnomah County. And so where do you get the bulk of minority workers and contractors? In Multnomah County. And yet we're funding 80% of that bridge. People from everywhere else out of around the country, more or less, is benefiting from that the building of that Selwood Bridge, except for the folk who are paying for it in Multnomah County. You follow what I'm saying? Does that make any sense?
It literally goes back to, where does wealth come from?
Right. Where does wealth come from? And listen, if you're already behind, it's difficult to catch up. Now, this is a point that I try to make to all the folk that are involved in this. You cannot grow a community economically if half the people were afraid to take a risk to go into business? It flies in the face of the whole concept of entrepreneurship if, in fact, people can see literally that we're killing people on the vine who attempt to go into business and who want to stay in business. There's my own kids don't want to go into the construction business based upon the hardships and the literally very few people who are involved as workers and as entrepreneurs in the area. And this is not beanbagged. This whole construction thing is not beanbagged. You got to have a fair shot at making it work. I don't care what color you are. So if you add on racism and exclusionary practices on top of that, then you're almost guaranteed to fail.
What's the most important thing for everyday people who never think about this stuff to know about why construction contracting equity affects them?
Well, they should be outraged at the game that's being played here, because whatever taxes, whatever benefit that these building projects are supposed to yield, it's kind of pay me now or pay me later, because every dollar that doesn't go toward lifting up a community is paid back on the social service end. And people, when they see high rates of crime in their community, or they see kids who are from homes that are unstable, and then the fundamental elements of much of that has to do with people's inability to contribute economically in the community. I know that sounds a little distant, but it's the truth. And in fact, one of the articles that I've written over the years is to demonstrate that disproportionately minority communities, especially the African-American community, is disproportionately associated with nonprofits and social service agencies, in contrast to business agencies and business opportunities. And so therefore, you can almost put a barometer on this community based upon its absence of minority businesses. And that's why that we're not doing very well. And people can say, ain't it awful? But if they really want to do something about this, they would show up at those commission meetings and ask why, after study after study, after report after report, we can't make any progress on this. This is not rocket science. This is math. This is accountability. This is tracking. These are all good. You do this if you have a government that is conscientious about making sure every tax dollar works and every citizen has an equal chance to participate in the economy. And every everyday citizen ought to be down there just like they would in Black Lives Matter or anything else. You know, we typically want to do something when these crises show up and people or somebody dies, but we're literally dying every day in our community, ergo the gentrification. It's a slow death, and the average citizen should know that it's not going to change unless they make economic equity front and center on every campaign. Everybody that gets into office should ask these hard questions. And just like this commission, who they tried to hide the fact that they had a no-confidence vote, everybody that's voting, anybody that's getting ready to go into office, that includes Novak or Fritz or any of them who are trying to get in office, they ought to judge their campaign by their impetus about trying to make sure we have economic equity in our communities, not just lift service, but we can track it and we can do it systematically, and we need to do it yesterday.
We have this community announcement. Anne Newman, author of The Good Death, An Exploration of Dying in America, is speaking tonight at 7:30 at Powell's Books on Hawthorne. It is co-sponsored by Death with Dignity. That's tonight at 7:30, Anne Newman at Powell's Books on Hawthorne. Rose City Native Radio is next.
This is John Shuck, host of Progressive Spirit, asking the question, if there's no God, where's the hope?
The hope of life itself. If you say, well, look, if there's no God, what's left? Well, what's left is the world. What's left is everything around us.
John Caputo is the author of The Folly of God, A Theology of the Unconditional. Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Heaven's here on earth.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Tim DeChristopher Lecture, Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Tim DeChristopher, as Bitter 70, disrupted a Bureau of Land Management oil and gas auction in 2008 by outbidding oil companies for land parcels around Arches and Canyonlands National Parks in Utah. His actions led to a 21-month imprisonment. Again, that's a lecture by Tim DeChristopher titled Wielding the Power of Vulnerability, Thursday, April 7th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Like the KBOO Community Radio Facebook page. When you find KBOO Community Radio on Facebook and like our page, you'll have events, ticket giveaways, and great information on our programming delivered directly to your personal feed. One out of every seven humans is on Facebook, so using Facebook to share KBOO with your friends and family has never been easier. You can also like this current show, Rose City Native Radio, on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio.